on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook. The Sportscast. Basketball in March.
The Top 25 Rundown presented by The Sportscast.
This is the Top 25 Rundown. And here's your host, Alan West.
Good evening and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown presented by The Sportscast. Today is March 13th, 2022. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all your channels, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch.tv, and Apple Podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and review. It'll help us out tremendously. We are also on DAB Digital Radio. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, play Sportscast, visit us on thesportscast.net, also follow us on Twitter at thesportscast1, and check out our app, The Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. Hello, my name is Alan West. Welcome to the Top 25 Rundown. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, not only do we have Nicholas Hodel here, the journalism, mass communication graduate from Arizona State 2023, and now the Brenham Banner Press sports writer, but it is the time that we have waited for men's basketball. March Madness. It is here. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Oh, wait. It is getting really exciting, Alan, and there's just so much action in all of these conference tournaments. It seems like every day this month there is something crazy going on, and you know, I feel for those who are not taking in these conference tournaments because they're missing out big time. And I mean, some of these mid-major conference championship games have been absolutely electric. So it's getting closer, and even these power conference tournaments now are getting underway. We've had some big storylines starting to come out of these things.
That is true. Before we get into them, though, you and me were just looking at a video for how baseball season's starting to get in a full swing. Apparently today there was a game between Southern Indiana and St. Thomas, where the first baseman and the hitter had a meeting of the minds and the heads, where one had a concussion and a broken jaw. I would say that's a pretty epic hit.
Yeah, and that it's not something you're going to see replicated too often. And there's good reason for that, because that was tough to watch. That was really tough to watch. So hopefully both of those guys get better as soon as possible. But man, that's a really hard thing to recover from. That's going to be tough for both of those athletes.
On the plus side, at least baseball season, you still got a few months before you get to their tournament. So you know what? It should be okay. But thoughts and prayers go to them. We'll see how that goes. Before we jump into men's basketball, which I know is your bread and butter, we're going to hit women's basketball. And I wanted to bring up the South Carolina player, Cardozo. I know you've seen how she's done pretty well, and not only has she been doing well for South Carolina, she actually went back to Brazil and was part of their Olympic team qualifying, I believe, a week or two ago. I found out that on Saturday, Dawn Staley flew up her mother and sister so that they could be with her and watch her play basketball for the first time in 8 years. That's pretty special to me. I mean, I'm not sure about you, but I mean,
yeah, that stuff's always awesome to see families unite like that. That's always a good thing to watch. Now, of course, what happened between South Carolina and LSU towards the end with the fight, that wasn't so fun to watch. But you know, and let's not forget too how South Carolina got to that final against Tennessee at the buzzer. Tennessee not playing any defense. Let's get that out of the way. That was probably some of the worst last-second defense I've ever seen in my life. That was terrible. I mean, I don't know how you can let a potential three-point shooter for the win so open like that. I mean, no one was defending. I mean, that was a joke. That was a joke of a defensive play. I don't know what Tennessee was trying to run, but whatever it was, they didn't run it very well. But South Carolina, they're going to have an opportunity to end this whole thing undefeated. And this is setting up really nicely between South Carolina and Iowa out of the Big Ten, who played a fantastic game in the Big Ten Women's Championship game. If both of those teams can face off in a national semifinal or face off in a final, that TV ratings are going to go through the roof. With the appeal of Caitlin Clark and a potential undefeated South Carolina team looking to end up a perfect year, you get those two in a Final Four situation, semifinal or final, TV ratings should rightly go through the roof.
I mean, I don't know if you watched their final game against Ohio State where Caitlin Clark broke Pete Maravich's record. How she flopped with Cody McMahon and just how, unfortunately for that game, I try to be unbiased even though I'm an Ohio State fan, but that game, it just felt like the refs were just dinging Ohio State most of that game, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
Caitlin Clark, she's a heck of a player, and I think this year, well, I'll go out on a limb and say this. I think this year, Iowa's better than they were last year.
and Caitlin Clark's got really good support around her. I mean, that Big
Exactly.
Championship against Nebraska, that was not just all Caitlin Clark. Clark had
Oh
a huge
no.
role second half and in overtime, but her teammates really did a phenomenal job. And I mean, some of those big plays with blocks and especially some of the blocks that were going down. I mean, some of these blocks are unbelievable at the women's game. And just, I mean, it's just a tremendous effort. And that's just what it's going to take from a team as a whole collective, because Iowa cannot win this thing without just with Caitlin Clark. Obviously they have to get good stuff from Clark. That is a given. But they need pretty much the entire starting five to figure a way to make a meaningful contribution. If not, Iowa's not gonna win a national championship. It's gonna go to a team like South Carolina or Stanford, who dropped the Pac-12 title game to USC earlier on. So it's gonna be fascinating just to see where Iowa can kind of slot themselves in. And just what kind of run they can make, because they are certainly capable of it, but they need an entire group effort to get the job done.
I'm not sure if you saw this, but one of the other games for Iowa, one of the players there, one of her teammates rather, scored 40 points one game. So, I mean, they have the firepower when they need it. And I mean, they're going to be definitely one of the toughest teams. They should get a one seed now. I mean, I was kind of rooting for Ohio State to get the one seed, but if they get a two seed, that's not bad because this year they weren't really even sure how it was going to go. And they got the regular season title, so we can go for that. But I think that the women's tournament, even though we're not going to really talk about it as much, and it doesn't always get as much press as the men's, I think this year between Caitlin Clark, then Cameron Brink at Stanford, LSU, South Carolina, and then seeing how Notre Dame or USC, how they are, I think later on in the tournament, all those teams, I think we're going to see some of the storylines moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking at what ESPN has in the women's side for their bracketology, Iowa did move up into a one seed slot, and so did USC, with teams like LSU and Texas going onto that two line. So women's basketball is no longer the sport where you can just shoo in all the one seeds for the Final Four, write them in right away, then fill out the rest of your bracket. It's no longer like that. You have really solid teams and brands, chance, but everywhere else you look within this bracket, and that's good for the women's game to have all these different teams jockeying for position. And ultimately, it is the chaos and march that makes these tournaments so special. And we're getting to a point with the women's game where that's becoming more and more prevalent, and that is really good for really the sport as a whole. Because you get more people watching the women's game, get a few over to the men's game, and it all becomes an addition to both sides. And I think that's probably the best thing going forward for the sport as a whole, to have both sides blossoming.
Absolutely that. And then you know how they're trying to talk about expanding the tournament, but I mean that's just a hornet's nest that we're going to try to avoid today. But
We
as
could
I'm
talk
looking at
an
the
hour on
automatic,
that.
exactly. We'll catch that another time. But as I'm looking at the automatic qualifiers, the first one I see for the women for Ohio Valley, the UT Martin Skyhawks lost to Southern Indiana. But because Southern Indiana is currently in a Division I transition period, they can't play in the NCAA tournament. So UT Martin Skyhawks, they get to join instead. Because remember how we had that last year with the three teams on the men's side, and how that was a disappointing kind of storyline that we had to deal with?
Yeah, it seems like almost every year we're having to deal with this at least once within the men's or the women's game somewhere. This year it's the Screaming Eagles that have to kind of take the hit for it there, which that transition rule.
There's a lot of
You're
things that
good
are going to
enough
be
to win your
changing.
conference. Yeah, I mean, if you're good enough to win your conference, you're good enough to represent your conference in the NCAA tournament. Not some NCAA people looking at your finances or your status for 4 years being like, well, you haven't done this yet. You haven't gone through the process yet. Oh, stop it. That's a joke. But looking through the rest of the mid-major list, big shout out to Presbyterian on the women's side, winning the Big South, getting their first ever bid into the NCAA women's tournament. And also Eastern Washington out of the Big Sky, second ever appearance, first since 1987. Marshall as well breaking a long drought, only their second women's appearance, first since 1997. So you still got a lot more mid-major leagues left to go. Most of the women's power leagues start theirs in the first week, then the men's, which again is good for the power leagues and the women's side, get that TV time, but they wouldn't get it if they were all playing now. Let's be honest with ourselves here. That would all go on the men's side. There's still a lot of intrigue just to see where some of these mid-majors may end up yet.
Absolutely. And for the Southern Conference, you had Chattanooga. They advanced. They're making their 17th appearance. Like you said, Iowa for the Big Ten, they're making their 30th appearance. Notre Dame for the ACC is making their 29th. South Carolina is making their 20th. For the Atlantic 10, Richmond advanced, so they're going to make their fourth appearance in the tournament. Pac-12, USC is making their 18th. UConn's making their 35th. Green Bay Phoenix for the Horizon League is making their 19th. For the WCC, you got Portland making their sixth appearance. For the Summer League, you got the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. They're making their 12th. The Big 12, you got Big 12, you got Texas making their 36th. And then, like you said, Eastern Washington's making their second. And that's without having the. We still have the AAC tournament, the Mountain West tournament, the Southland tournament, the American East, the Mid-American, the WAC, the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, the MEAC, the SWAC, Conference USA, Ivy League, Big West, the Atlantic Sun, Northeast, Patriot League, CAA, and Missouri Valley Conference tournaments still to come.
A lot of leaks.
That was a little bit of a mouthful, but I mean, you got to make sure you say them all just because everyone deserves their time to shine. And I mean, they're putting in the work. Why shouldn't they get the recognition?
Right. Rep, that is
So,
absolutely the case.
Nick, I'm sorry. Now it's come to the time where we get to talk about the men's tournaments. So, when you were watching games this weekend, what caught your eye?
Woo-wee. Sunday afternoon, we had the MVC tournament and the ASEM tournament coming down to the wire at the same time. And the TV putting on the MVC had the small screen with the ASUN, and it was absolutely glorious to watch both of these games go down to the wire. The A Sun, Stetson, first ever appearance in the men's tournament, winning the A Sun. And this is a Stetson program that was just, for a long time, they were just in the dumps, at the bottom, pretty much without fail. But this Stetson group, and in particular what Jalen Blackwood was able to do, an A-Sun championship game record, 43 points, a career high. Dude couldn't miss. He was such a big part of what Stetson did on Sunday against an Austin Peay team who really gave them everything they had, everything you could want out of a conference championship game. And again, for Stetson, their first NCAA tournament appearance, 100% deserved the right to get in there. Likely looking at a team that is heading to Dayton as part of the first four, competing against one of the other six teams. But certainly, major props to them. It could be them and Wagner out of the Northeast Conference. And Wagner did something that hasn't been done before in the Northeast Conference, winning three road games in the conference tournament to get there, defeating all of the top three seeds to get to the NCAA tournament. And that is certainly a remarkable achievement for this Wagner team, who finished the conference season with under 500 record at 7-9. But all that matters is what you do in March, and they are in for the first time in over two decades, that Wagner group. But back to the ace and MVC devil, what Indiana State and Drake was able to pull off was an incredible contest that proved why both teams are worthy of the NCAA tournament. Drake getting the job done, they are going to be a dangerous team. Tucker DeFreeze, their main guy, has been someone that has been around the block for a while with the Drake Bulldogs, and he really led that effort. And I'm looking at just the possible six seeds for what the bracket matrix has, and again, that's a composite of today, 88 different bracketologies. Utah State, Wisconsin, Texas Tech, Nevada. And I think Drake would have a shot against a few of those teams. I think they would have a good shot. But Indiana State's going to have to sweat this thing out. Now, they are firmly on the bubble without the major opportunities that the power conference schools have within their conference or even in the non-conference, because all these power conference schools are wussies. And not scheduling these great mid-major teams. They have to take their six free bye wins, if they can earn them, that is, because obviously that isn't always the case. But the thing that Indiana State has going for them is that within the net rankings, they are one of the top teams in the bubble. Sitting at 29th, there's no particular metric that speaks poorly of the Sycamores, and that's a huge thing in itself. Both the resume average between its two metrics and the quality metric average is 41. That's a good spot to be on the bubble, combined with a net rank of 29. There's nothing wrong with any of those numbers at all when comparing them to, say, a Texas A&M or a Wake Forest, where a few of those metrics do speak poorly of these teams compared to the rest of the bubble. Well, Indiana State only has the one Q1 win and a quad four loss, which may play big come selection Sunday. I think the Sycamores right now are in a decent spot, and we'll kind of discuss some of these upcoming conference tournaments why I think that. But there are certain things that Indiana State needs to happen that could only benefit them because of the way that a few of the potential quote-unquote bid steal opportunities are laid out this year. It may not be as much of a bid steal as the bracketologies have right now, as much as they are opportunity for someone else in the bubble to get in if certain things happen. So it's going to be a very nervous few days for the Sycamores, but right now they're just kind of waiting and waiting to see what happens. Because if there are any big bid steals that happens, Indiana State is likely the first one to go. So they really need kind of things to lay out perfectly. But right now, Indiana State, they're not in a terrible spot. They just need some things to go their way.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I mean, I'm definitely curious to see if they can make it, just because they've been a team that's, I don't want to say they've been under the radar, but the last time they got as much publicity as they're getting right now, you had Larry Bird playing for them.
Yeah. Absolutely. And there was no home field making dope shooting shirts back then, because the shooting shirts back then were amazing and everything. Don't get me wrong, I'm not dropping $140, but every all that publicity was great for the Indiana State program. It's good to see a name like that amongst a bubble that is typically power conference infused. So really hoping the Sycamores can find their way in.
If not, I mean, while I hate to say that they won't make it, I hope they do. But if for some reason they didn't, I'm pretty sure they'd make the NIT probably without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah,
Because I doubt that they
even
would put
with
him
the
into the
yeah.
CBI.
Yeah, even with the new NIT automatic qualification rules, Indiana State is pretty much a shoo-in for at least that, and to have an opportunity to host, which for mid-majors like that is now a major accomplishment with how the NCAA has reworked the NIT for the absolute worst. But they panicked. It was a panic move off of rumors. That's what it was.
Course.
But the way it is now, for Indiana State to have a chance to host NIT games is a major accomplishment for that level of basketball.
Yeah, so I mean that's something that definitely we got to keep an eye on. And then Kansas, I'm just looking at their game. It's in the second half now. Right now, Kansas is down 38 to 25. I do know that with Dickinson and McCullers out due to injury, it's definitely going to be a lot harder for them, but it just, I don't know about you, Nick. The way that this Kansas team's playing right now, I'm worried. I'm not sure if they're going to make it past this round.
Yeah, and if these injuries continue, Kansas is vulnerable. That is a team that, with a loss, could potentially drop down to a four line of situation. And you look at some of these third teams, McNeese, who is in by virtue of winning the Southland. Samford has looked really strong over the course of their conference tournament, getting in from the Southern. Vermont still has one game to go to clinch their spot over against UMass Lowell in Saturday's final in the America East. And UC Irvine is kind of sitting around that 13 line as well. But I mean, McNeese is a team that, I mean, you get them against undermanned Kansas. I mean, it would be difficult for me to go against McNeese in that scenario, or even a Samford team. I mean, whoever goes up against an undermanned Kansas might be a popular upset pick if it is a 4-13. If it's a 3-14, it becomes a little harder for me to justify it. I'm not necessarily sure how good some of these 14s are. Morehead State did look solid in the OVC tournament, winning that, punching the first bid to the NCAA tournament. Oakland had to really fight their way through and through in the Horizon League Championship, and Charleston's really not that bad either. So again, still a lot to be determined between now and next week, Thursday or Friday, on the injury status. That's the big thing really for Kansas is for them, kind of doesn't really matter what happens in this Big 12 tournament. Just get those guys healthy, prepared for the NCAA tournament. Because if you don't get those guys back, that's where the alarm bells probably should start to ring a little bit.
Yeah, no, I see that there's a quick recap, like you said, for the automatic bids, we got the Colgate from Patriot League. They made a fifth straight appearance. McNeese from the Southland, their first since 2002. South Dakota State won the Summit League. Their seventh appearance first in 2022. St. Mary's won the WCC against Gonzaga. That was a good game last night. The third
Yeah.
consecutive, and then
Yeah, don't
Charleston,
say
they got
that.
their second consecutive. Oakland is making their first appearance since 2011. Like you said, Wagner, their first 2003. Samford, their first since 2000. Stetson, their first appearance total. Drake for the MVC, their second consecutive. Longwood won the Big South, like you said, their first since 2002. Morehead State won the OVC, their first since 2021. But I want to talk about James Madison. They're first since 2013, and they won over Arkansas State. I mean, you remember how they started the year, don't you?
Right. It was that big win they had way back in November against Michigan State that really kickstarted the whole season of college basketball. That big win for James Madison got them ranked for a little while before they eventually fell off that top 25. But now this is a James Madison team that is looking really good at 31-3. I mean, they're three losses for the Appalachian State twice, and the Southern Miss on the road, and this is a team that is really starting to find something that has really found something, but especially in a team like Arkansas State to go from the regular season only beating them by four on the road as just smashing them on a neutral court in the conference tournament championship. They have a really, really good 3-point performance. Effect and such, just a really effective play on offense just was great to see out of this group. And some of these metrics are really liking the way that James Madison is. Looking at the Bart Torvik site, their effective field goal percentage on both sides of the ball are really good. They're a really good shooting team, which is really important to pull off upsets to be able to get that taken care of. That is a big deal. And just they're a really, really sound team that unfortunately needed the automatic bid to get in, but they are in, and they're gonna be a really tough out. And really that game against Michigan State was really the only chance they had to go up against one of the big boys in this sport. And so yeah, so I mean, now that they get the opportunity in the NCAA tournament, that is going to be a really fun watch. Whoever goes up against James Madison, I think, should be very scared. I mean, that is going to be a really tough order for whichever 5 seed gets him. Because I mean, I guarantee you, James Madison ends up in that 12 line and just becomes a really juicy 12-5 potential upset.
Definitely. I mean, the thing about that win against Michigan State, Tom Izzo had never lost in that building in November.
Yeah, I mean,
So,
they came in and really shocked them. They absolutely shocked Michigan State, and that also took Michigan State playing one of its worst games of the entire season. I mean, they shot three horribly. I mean, their effective offensive numbers were horrible, but that's the kind of thing that James Madison can do. They can cause some chaos on defense. They are good at that. And I don't have the lack of confidence in this team to do it to that someone else again.
And actually, for the ACC tournament, I just turned that on for a second. They just showed Jim Boeheim's at the ACC tournament.
Oh man, poor Syracuse. Poor
Yeah.
Syracuse had that on for a little bit, and that was not a good effort at all from Syracuse when they really needed to have a big week, and they just kind of shot themselves in the foot repeatedly in that second half. Now that Syracuse team, yeah, 80th in net going into the day, they're gonna have a really hard time even qualifying for the NIT automatically. As again, remember the Power Six leagues have two automatic bids by virtue of the net, which they can say all they want about how it's a sorting tool, but that goes out the door when you start employing automatic qualifications using that metric. But that's an aside. Syracuse is gonna have a hard time getting to any postseason with what they have built. So I mean, you assume. You take the top five teams in the net with Wake Forest and Pitt, a big battle tomorrow. That's a big one for either one of those two programs. But you take the top three, you assume they're in. You take one of Wake Forest or Pittsburgh coming down to the NIT, and Virginia will probably get in as well. There's still Virginia Tech and NC State that Syracuse has to manage, And Syracuse blew the opportunity against NC State in a way that will really help their hurt their metrics. And what Boston College is doing to Clemson too, Syracuse is likely going to miss the postseason. Very likely miss the postseason, and that's not good for that Syracuse program. Basketball is better and Syracuse is good, and right now that's just not the case at all. But
Well, I mean,
also
they're
really
having to
surprising.
rebuild.
Yeah, but also surprising to see what's going on with Clemson in that second round game ongoing too. They are getting whooped on a little bit here, which is really not good for Clemson. I mean, that's the
Well, the thing
last
is, their shots aren't
want to
dropping
leave.
either, which is a thing, too, which isn't
Yeah, that's
helping.
the last impression you want to leave. So Clemson slay us a five in that matrix. They can easily fall to a six and go up against a Drake or one of those teams that comes out of the first four. And there's usually someone out of that first four that ends up making waves. And if they go up against Clemson, I mean, I think that's one people are going to have to seriously consider one way or another what they want to do with that in their bracket, because that could be a potentially juicy situation there.
Yeah, no, the play that they just showed for Boston College, the shooter was behind the 3-point line trying to make a shot. He airballed it, so one of his teammates tried to do a circus shot when he caught the ball. Let's just say it didn't go well. I mean,
Oh,
it's
good Lord.
Clemson right now, it just seems like their shots aren't falling, which whenever your shots aren't falling, it's going to make for a really long day. So
Yeah. That's
while you're looking.
the best way to put it. That's about the best way to put it. And this Clemson team has had a few stinkers like that throughout the year. I mean, just we lose to teams like Georgia Tech earlier on in the year, and you know, they have been solid over the course of ACC play, and when they do lose, it has been by very minimal. But this is a team that has been known to have bad performances from beyond the arc. In the regular season, another day on that loss, 5 of 28. In the regular season, a really close home win against Louisville, they're 5 of 21, and you know they have some blips where they're just not good shooting. So it is certainly possible for someone to go into that tournament and knock Clemson off.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, I think that's part of the mystique of the aura we have in college basketball for the tournaments before the tournament, because some teams you wouldn't think would have a chance can make a long run during their conference tournaments, and the next thing you know, they make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and this is where the big steals tend to happen, and this is where the bubble begins to shrink a little bit. Which right now, I mean, we mentioned Indiana State earlier. New Mexico is very much in a situation where they need to do something good to get in. Looking at that matrix, New Mexico, it's the first team out, and while certain folks like Jerry Palm had them in, others like Minority had them on the first four out. So they really need to do something good, but. And kind of get on the big steal topic and kind of look ahead as to what else is going on. This is where things become interesting when looking at it from a bubble scenario, because teams like Richmond and South Florida are slated in as by virtue of them being regular season champions of their league. If they go on to win their conference tournament, though, it is very much a big steal situation. Dayton looks like they are for sure going to be in. FAU out of the American looks like they are for sure going to be in. So from that holistic standpoint, we're already expecting two big steals. So if either one of those, Richmond or South Florida, falls, which I am expecting to happen, that means someone else in that bubble is going to jump their way in. So we are looking at a scenario where if you are a New Mexico, if you are a Texas A&M in particular, or a Villanova, the winner of Wake Forest Pitt tomorrow, you are looking at the situation and thinking to yourself, okay, we see what's going on here. It's not necessarily for sure that we're going to be out if Richmond or South Florida end up falling. Because again, like I mentioned, those are two spots that are being taken on the virtue of the regular season championship by many bracketologists. So one of those teams falls, that's gonna open it up for someone else to jump their way in. So still a long way to go, yet as far as what we're gonna find out the next few days. But I would keep an eye on the A-10 tournament and the American Athletic Conference tournament. Even the A-10, there could still be room for someone else to steal a bid. A team like a VCU, just as an example. I mean, this is certainly a scenario to where just because Richmond is slated there does not necessarily mean that they are the one to worry about. As there are certain other teams who have the capability to get the job done that they've shown throughout the year. Richmond just happens to be the regular season champion. But there are certainly other teams in these leagues that have the potential, and that's not even to mention in the American outside of South Florida, the regular season champion. What happens if Memphis finds their form, like they've kind of teased in the non-conference that they can? What happens if they suddenly find it, get hot, and win the American? That's going to be a bid that goes away for the bubble. So you certainly have the potential for bid steals off a regular season and champions winning the conference tournaments, but don't think that those are the only ones that can get the job done, because that's not the case.
Of course not. Also, going back to the Big 12 championship, Kansas has fought their way back to being down by four against Cincinnati with just under 14 minutes left to go in the second half.
Yeah, kind of had a feeling Kansas would find their way back into this thing. I mean, KJ Adams is pulling all kinds of weight right now, and he's gonna have to if the injury situation holds up in the NCAA tournament. And I'm sure being in Kansas City is helping those Jayhawks out tremendously. Because even watching the end of Kansas State, Texas, there were a lot of blue in the stands, kind of waiting on that game to finish up.
I am not surprised. I mean, that's why I'm curious, because of the Big 12, with Houston possibly being the number one, a contender for the number one overall seed. I think that just how this tournament's going to shape up. I know that the ACC usually gets more teams in, but I'd say the Big 12, you've got the potential for, I think it was like five or six. Does that sound about right?
Well, it may end up being a little more than that. Try nine out of the Big 12.
Really?
That's what we're looking at potentially. And I mean, the Big 12 is going to have the most representation out of anyone. It's just a matter of how many. And it is looking like it is going to be nine. And there's not even a Big 12 team in the bubble. And all nine of those, whether it's Houston fighting for the overall one, Iowa State, Baylor, Kansas, BYU, all in the top five seed lines. Then you have teams like Texas and Oklahoma and TCU who have really found their stride throughout the year to put themselves in position to get into the tournament. And even Texas Tech as well. There's your ninth. And they're all sitting pretty right now. They're all well on the right side of that bubble.
I know that Iowa State, I remember watching the Kansas Iowa State game when it was at Iowa State. Iowa State at home this year, they were almost unbeatable. I think that they lost one or two games at home.
That place in Iowa State, that's a very special place, Hilton. They love that home atmosphere, and they are certainly a team that prides themselves on that. And you know, in the Big 12, you gotta have the good home atmospheres. And Iowa State has one of the best in all of college basketball. And they're able to use that and really to catapult themselves into a place to where they are looking at getting the last two, or even if they drop to the first three and the second three, they're in a really good spot for this NCAA tournament.
All right, so I'm going to have you play devil's advocate for a minute. Who do you think are going to be the 4-1 seeds?
The one seats? Purdue, UConn, Houston are locked. They're there. I don't think they can do anything to hurt themselves, even by losing in the conference tournament, especially Houston. When you look at the skill of the Big 12, I mean, they could take a loss in Kansas City and be okay. Purdue and UConn could do the same in their respective conference tournaments. Those three are really jockeying for position for the overall number one. The big fight is between Tennessee and North Carolina for the final one seed. Most bracketologists are favoring Tennessee over North Carolina. And I think for either one of these two, they need to be thinking about winning their conference tournament to give themselves the best possible opportunity. If Tennessee wins the SEC tournament, debate's over. Tennessee will have earned that last number one. But if Tennessee falls and leaves an opening for North Carolina, that could be where things get to be really interesting. And I think that's what's going to have to happen, because Tennessee, they beat North Carolina on almost every single metric across the board. The only one that's not, North Carolina is fourth in strength of record, Tennessee fifth. Volunteers have North Carolina beat every other metric. They're quad 1A, which is a better distinction than just quad one. Tennessee has six wins there, two more than North Carolina. Neither one of them have a bad loss, and they're kind of the same in quad one and quad two as far as number of wins go. Tennessee has just one Q2 loss compared to North Carolina's two. But really, at that point, we're cherry picking there. That's part of the margin. We're kind of cherry picking. But really, just based off the metrics, Tennessee right now has it. They're in control. All they got to do is use the home Nashville crowd to win an SEC tournament championship. And they got it. I mean, I don't think there'll be much debate at that point.
Fair enough. I mean, I was definitely curious about that. What do you think about North Carolina beating Duke already two times this year in the ACC?
That's big for North Carolina. And that really catapulted themselves into a spot to where they are for sure going to be on that two line, barring chaos. This would have to take a bad loss for North Carolina in the ACC tournament. Arizona winning the Pac-12 tournament, which I think is going to happen regardless. This would take Marquette winning the Big East tournament. Iowa State winning the Big 12. And even then, I just don't know if there's enough teams to catapult North Carolina to bump the Tar Heels down to a three. That's pretty much, I believe, a set deal for North Carolina to go in as a two and then try to avoid a really good team in that first round, just kind of see what they can do.
Yeah, no, just because as we're watching the tournament, because we're in the second round for the ACC and the Big 12, and it's not going to get any easier.
No, I mean, these power conference tournaments are some of the best television you'll find all year in sports, with the tight competition. And once you add in the bubble storylines, there's a lot of good things that come out of those power conference tournaments as far as television quality. Those are some really, really good games every year.
So do you think Duke's going to be more like a 5 seed or a 6 seed? Where are they projected right now?
They're not that low. Duke at the moment in the matrix is slotted in as the third three. And I don't think they can really drop much further, because some of the competitions below them is three SEC schools that are undoubtedly going to finish in different spots in the SEC tournament. An Illinois team that can potentially jump up to a three if they win the Big Ten tournament, but that would take a massive undertaking in knocking Purdue off, who I absolutely expect is going to win the Big Ten tournament, going away. Because really, the Big Ten is Purdue, Illinois, and then everybody else. I wouldn't even put Wisconsin in a tier with Illinois, because I don't have a lot of faith in Wisconsin, really, at this point. But Duke, I think, is in a fine spot. Now, if they drop to a four, potentially go up against McNeese or Samford, there could be some trouble there. But I think right now Duke is in an okay position to go into the NCAA tournament in a decent spot to at least get to the second weekend. But as long as they kind of stay at that three line, Morehead State's really the only one of the projected four teams I can see causing some problems. Not knowing not much about Charleston, and I'm not really sure about Oakland whatsoever. So that's going to be an interesting situation there for sure.
Understand. Are there any other teams that, as you've been looking at the brackets, or as you've been looking at bracketology, that you want to make sure that you mention about?
Well, a lot of the drama is going to come in the Power Conference tournaments, particularly the Big East tournament over the next few days. You're looking at a team like Saint Hall on the Nardi's last four byes list, Saint John's in the last four in. Villanova's going to be sweating this thing out. Providence in the next four out. If they can win a few games, they're going to jump over some of these bubble teams. So from a bubble scenario, I think that is probably the most interesting tournament. We got four bubble teams, really just having to fight amongst each other. And in a lot of the cases, I mean, Providence is going to have to win at least two because Georgetown's not going to help them out much. Villanova's going to have to win two because DePaul's not going to help them out much. St. John's and Seton Hall will face each other. And that is a big matchup. Right there, in the bubble situation, St. John's loses that, they could be falling out of the picture entirely. So that is something to really keep an eye on there out in the Big East. I think from a bubble perspective, that is the most entertaining of the tournaments that we have really to follow throughout this next week, just because of the bubble scenario that we could potentially have on our hands. And oh, Villanova might drop that. Last minute, DePaul's up two. And this is really shocking because DePaul has been terrible. 0-20 in the conference. I cannot recall the last time I've seen that record in a conference play. Only three wins overall. And it looks like Justin Morris done something tremendous.
Nice, and in the Kansas game, Adams just got hurt.
Oh my goodness. So that's another problem for Kansas, trying to keep him as healthy as you can. So,
Yeah, they
man,
just had
Kansas
to
is just
pull him from the game.
reeling, aren't they?
They
Wow.
are. I just looked at the replay, and he's on the bench right now. But it looked like, I guess he maybe stepped on somebody's foot coming down or something, but it, I would be very surprised if he comes back in the game.
Man, wow. Yeah, so Justin Moore wins it in the last 10 seconds for Villanova, which is fitting for DePaul to go out like that. But that saves Villanova. I mean, they could not lose to DePaul and survive. So that is a big time shot from Justin Moore. Only has 10, but gets the big one to fall. So Villanova, they avoid the ugly loss. That's what you want to do if you're Villanova. Avoid the ugly loss. Now you have a chance to go out and get one more, which I still think is required for Villanova, barring a meltdown from so many bubble teams. Villanova's going to have to win again tomorrow to try and get themselves into the picture.
Well, like you said, that they've started the groundwork, so that's something. But needless to say, he will be thought of in very high regard after making that shot, just because even though you see how everyone talks about games during the regular season, but during the tournament for certain things, you know that legends are made. Think about Johnny Flynn in Syracuse. I believe they had the two or three overtime game where he basically willed them to the win in that game.
Yeah, that Big East tournament is known for so many great moments, whether it's a six overtime game years and years ago, or Cardiac Kemba back in those days. When back in the days, where they still showed the AP poll ranking by side teams on the scorebook rather than conference tournament seeding. God, I'm so glad we got out of those days. I'm so glad we got out of that and recognize that that thing does not matter right now. But yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, so much stuff can happen in these this month in the next few days, and there's just a lot of games to follow to really get a good eye on what exactly needs to happen for so many of these teams. So it's gonna be a fun few days here, getting to really see how all of this shakes out.
So, even though I know that you're staying extremely busy with all the high school sports, has it been, I won't say kind of relaxing, but has it been kind of comforting to come back and watch the tournament right now, just to kind of get a little bit of prep work again to make sure, just because I remember last year how excited you were, not only with your top 25, but just how you had everything set up for your bracket for the tournament.
Yeah, it has been a good feeling the last few days. This has been a weird week around here. Spring break, or the Brazos Valley has pushed games up. So particularly Burton, 2A school down the road from here, had games 2 days in a row, Monday afternoon and then Tuesday evening, and even the Brighton Cobets had a game in the afternoon on Tuesday. So some more matinee games, which is not normal around here to have. Matinee district games. That's not normal in the slightest. And spring break has allowed that opportunity to commence. Not so much in the baseball side, but they are still playing their games at night. A big game around here will be the first home game for the Brenham Cubs at Fireman's Park, something I've been looking forward to for a long time, as there's a lot of history in this town with Brenham baseball and with Fireman's Park. So seeing a district game play out there is going to be a whole lot of fun. And even before I go to bed tonight, just seeing how these other two games go, it's going to be really fascinating, because Clemson DM being down 15 at Boston College late second half, I did not have that on my bingo card heading into the day. And even Cincinnati, they pushed that game back up to double digits. So Cincinnati, they're showing something here.
Yeah, no, if I remember this time last year, you were in Las Vegas because you were at the
Yes, the
tournament.
Pac-12 tournament.
And I
Yeah.
remember that when Vegas scored a goal, we could hear, you could hear that from the hotel room.
Because the hotel is right across the way from T-Mobile Arena. Oh man, those are good memories. Those are good memories. Don't have any goal horns to worry about here. Train horns, yes. Train horns, absolutely, because there is a train track, and this train track actually goes darn near Byron's Park, so it is something that they have to deal with 2 to 3 times a game, just hearing the train go down, and that does make an impact on the environment. And that train does go by pretty loud. That is something I had to get adjusted to at first, and some of these non-district games covering them at home and hearing the train go by. I mean, obviously I had heard about it from just kind of knowing the lore and knowing the location, but caught me by surprise a little bit. Not gonna lie to you, but yeah, I mean, there's still a whole lot to happen over the next 6 weeks here, because that's really what it comes down to. The next 6 weeks, how are you doing in your district? Nothing else matters. All that matters now is how you do in district play. If you can't do well in district play, you're not making the postseason. That's how it works here in Texas. It's all based on district play, and the top four teams get in. Everyone else is left out of it. So it's gonna be a fascinating few weeks. I've got a feeling that the teams here are gonna be right in the thick of the battle for the last spots, and those are very stressful. Those are very stressful playoff races for sure.
I have no doubt, and I will keep my fingers crossed for you, just because I know that as you're going to be watching those games and making sure to write about them. It's going to be, I'm not sure if challenging is the right word, but it's going to be maybe complicated just because how you're trying to see how the different games are going to end up looking at the standings. So, I
Yeah, I
mean,
mean, yeah, I mean, it's not something I'm used to seeing playoff races break out at the high school level, but I like it. I mean, it creates a different kind of pressure and a different kind of atmosphere that you don't see in a whole lot of states. I mean, I know where I grew up in Indiana, we didn't have that. It was just your conferences, and then everyone gets in the playoffs and go at it in sectionals, you know? And really, back in my days at high school playing tennis, I mean, we didn't really worry about the conference because this was before my high school moved into another conference, a more competitive conference. We were in a conference known as the Big Eight, and we would run right through this conference every year. I mean, some of these conference schools were not good at tennis compared to what we had. And really, we were just worried about making it to the semi state, which was the final 16, and then once semi-state Saturday comes around, see who you got. Because same thing, sectional round was pretty easy. Regionals were a little more difficult, but still an easier path. But here, you don't get to play it easy in the regular season. You got to fight for it, and I love that. And I don't know if there's a way. Indiana probably is too far gone with its history to try and have a district system. I don't think that would work very well in Indiana, but it works here, and it makes for tremendous entertainment. I mean, it's going to make some really good atmospheres, and in a baseball softball town, that's what I'm looking forward to see how these environments become alive in district play. So very much looking forward to the next 6 weeks.
I mean, that's great, and I can definitely understand why you will be looking forward to that. Although, I'm gonna say partially you're gonna be looking forward to how the tournament starts next week a little bit more, partially, but
Yeah, I
I
mean,
mean,
I'm got a little fear of missing out because I remember how much last year, how much I enjoyed that March last year from Vegas to Denver and doing all the things. I remember how much I enjoyed that. So there will be a little, especially the Final Four in Phoenix. I mean, I'm gonna have a big fear of missing out on Final Four weekend. But no, I mean, it's gonna be great. I mean, I've kind of accepted that this is a kind of a different phase for me, and you know, if I can work my butt off to get back to that, amazing. But community here is fantastic, and I've kind of accepted that I'm kind of in that different phase of where I'm no longer going crazy over trying to catch 10 different college basketball games. No, I'm the beat writer of the Brennan Cubs and Brennan Cubettes, and that right now is makes me as happy as anything else.
That's awesome, and as it should. I did see Boston College did beat Clemson. They're now going to face Virginia in the next round.
By 21
Kansas,
points. That
yep,
is
and
ugly. That is a really bad loss for Clemson. That
yep.
has the potential to drop them down a full seed line right there. That was the one thing Clemson could not do.
Yeah, no, understand about that. And Kansas is down 14 with 5:46 to go. So, as much as I would love to say a miracle could happen, I think when Adams went down, I think that basically put an end to their tournament hopes.
Wow. And by the way, too, props to Cincinnati. I know they're not going to get in the tournament unless they win the Big 12 tournament, which is very unlikely to happen, but props to them and even Central Florida for just kind of staying afloat. I mean, I think so many people doubted what Cincinnati and Central Florida in particular could do in a really difficult Big 12, but they held their own, and Cincinnati's going to find their 20th win of the year if they hold on to this thing, which I certainly did not think they could do it in the Big 12. So big shout out to both of those schools for kind of just being there and hanging around and not being absolutely terrible in a really, really good league. Because for first year newcomers like that. Honestly, we knew Houston would have the pedigree to do it, and BYU we knew would have the pedigree to do it. But I think a lot of people were very unsure about Cincinnati and Central Florida, and they have held their own, and they have just been able to find some wins. So I give a lot of credit to Cincinnati and Central Florida for what they were able to do, and not completely being a terrible team in the best league in the country. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And actually, I take it back. Adams is back in the game. So
that's good.
That's at least
That is
a
good
good
to hear.
Sign. But that,
yeah, that's good.
When you see that replay later on, you'll understand why it looked a little dicey for a minute there. But
Yeah. And he's had
so,
22 and 46. So, man, they need him right now in the worst possible way.
Yep, Timberlake hitting that three definitely helps. They're still down by 9 with just over 4 minutes to go. So it's going to definitely be a maybe another cardiac scenario. We'll see what happens. But Nick, as always, thank you for your time. And if we wanted to try to take a look at your work outside of here, if we wanted to try to see it on social media, what's the best way to do that?
So that is going to be over on on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it this week, at Hodel Sports. That's where you're going to find pretty much every single little update you could possibly want on the Brenham Cubs and Brenham Cubettes, if that is your sort of thing. And I certainly hope I can get you for that to become your thing, because that's what keeps me a job. but regardless, certainly going to be looking at a big 6-7 week stretch around here as the spring sports get into district play, get into some big playoff races, because it is not a sure thing at all for either one of these teams. I think they're going to have to fight right down to the last games to get into the playoffs. So we want to follow on all of the action at Hodel Sports. Best way to do that. You can also go to our website, brennanbanner.com, for a lot of those articles as well. Though we do only publish 3 times a week, we're gonna get you caught up on every single one of those production days. So it's gonna be a fun time. No season crossover, which is always a good thing, because those crossovers can be brutal between the fall and the winter and the spring. So don't have to deal with that. That is all pretty much done. So really now the focus is on the baseball Cubs and the softball Cubettes, and that, for this town, is pretty much all you could ask for. Get the spring sports, get them in playoff races, see how they do. And there's a lot of talent here, but there's also a lot of talent in all of District 21 5A. So that's going to be fun to follow for the next 6-7 weeks, and certainly hope you give me a follow to take in all the action with me, because it's going to be a roller coaster, but it's going to be a fun one.
I mean, that sounds great, and like I said, I appreciate you coming on today. For me, if you were going to follow me, I don't post as much, but I am on X at Allen F. West, or on Facebook and Instagram at allen.west.46. But you can also look up information for sports on our website, The Sportscast, or on Twitter, The Sportscast 1. But Nick, I wish the Brennan Cubs and Cubettes prosperous softball and baseball, not only district seasons, but playoff runs as well. So I'll be curious to check in on you for that. And I hope that as you are able to look at the tournament, I hope your bracket turns out better than mine's going to be.
Well, you know the thing in making brackets is typically the people who know a little bit less are doing a lot more than the experts. So me not being able to watch as much college basketball, maybe I got a little bit better of a shot. Who knows? Who knows?
Absolutely. No, I'll definitely keep my fingers crossed for me. But yeah, no, we'll see what happens. Thank you for the insight as always. And setting us up for March Madness, and we'll see how it goes, and hopefully we will be able to maybe get you on before the Final Four, depending on how your schedule is. Okay, I'm gonna look into how your schedule is, because I don't want to try to get you on all of a sudden you have a huge district game because no, we're not going to do that. But
Yeah.
I want to make sure that since this time of the year is so big, if I can get you on, I want to try to make sure I can do that.
Yeah, and we'll see what kind of opening there is, because it's I will say it's a lot better now than the crossover, but certainly looking forward to any chance I have. So again, thanks for having me on as always.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. But that's Nicholas Hodel. This is I'm Alan West. It's been a top 25 rundown. Have a great night, everybody.